In 1949, C.D. Wright was born in Mountain Home, Arkansas. She received a B.A. degree from Memphis State College, now the University of Memphis, in 1971, and an MFA from the University of Arkansas in 1976. She has published numerous volumes of poetry, including One with Others, Rising, Falling, Hovering, Cooling Time, An American Poetry Vigil, Steal Away, New and Selected Poems, and One Big Self, Prisoners of Louisiana. While much of Wright's early work is narrative and content, her later poetry is characterized by experimental forms, sharp wit, and a strong sense of place, most notably rooted in the old Ozarks and Rhode Island. Poetry, she says, is a necessity of life. It is a function of poetry to locate those zones inside us that would be free and declare them so. Among her numerous honors are fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Guggenheim Foundation, MacArthur Foundation, the Bunting Institute, as well as awards from the Lannan Foundation, the Witter Binner Prize, and a Whiting Award. She teaches currently at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome to Words on a Wire, C.D.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Can you kind of talk about when the shift in your poetry took place? Can you describe why you felt you had to move into a different aesthetic compared to the aesthetic in your earlier work?
Well, to overgeneralize, I would say that poetry of the South and the Mid-South, I call myself from being the Upper South, is pronouncedly narrative and often relies on received forms. And as I moved around the country and lived in San Francisco and New York and Mexico, I just came under the influence of the local, as I always do. And so that meant kind of a shift from a more rural demographic to a more urban one. So that was very influential for me, learning the poets of the city and learning kind of the intelligence of the city. So that's, I think that was my directive. And it wasn't about rejecting where I came from, but it was about kind of bringing it into some kind of contact with my new geographies, my new locales.
Currently, I'm reading One with Others, and I encountered this this passage I'd like to read. You want to illumine what you see, fear reflected off an upturned face, those walnuts turning black in the glass. This passage, which, by the way, is beautiful, and the book is fantastic, reminds me of that shift of rhythm and deep step shining where the language suddenly breaks out and says, after the iridectomy, the slow recognition of forms, a shirt on the floor looked like the mouth of a well, saucer of light on the wall, the hand of God. For me, this evokes Flannery O'Connor's anagogical vision where there's an image, but you see also beyond the image and you see many, many things. Can you speak a little bit about poetry as your way of seeing reality?
Well, it's the only medium I have to describe what I see. So, I mean, words have served me not just as descriptors, but as, you know, the medium by which I can transmit what I think I see. And that's seeing in the broadest sense of the term.
Right, like the artist says, it's harder to see than it is to express.
Right.
I'm wondering if you think, in terms of the way you see and your vision and the way you're writing these days, that the narratives you write have to be necessarily fragmented.
I don't know if I think of them so much as fragmented as I think of them as sort of diffused through other kinds of material, including information and the music cadence of what I think I'm also hearing and want to incorporate into what I see. And I think also that different forms, you know, arise to convey the material differently, and that gives you another sort of portal through which to enter what you want to express. So I think it's more like the narrative is there, and it's not exactly fragmented, but it's either diffused or it is sublimated somewhat. And I think if it were just another narrative, I would probably write it in prose.
Do you enjoy writing prose?
Well, I have one book called Cooling Time, an American Poetry Visual, which except for four poems is in prose. It's short prose passages. I have a novel that I fiddle with once in a while that I wrote years ago and have, you know, rewritten a number of times, but I've never been satisfied with it enough to put it out there.
Isn't One with Others almost like an historical novel told in verse? It has a very distinct narrative, advancing of plot, I guess you would say. Can you tell us a little bit about that narrative?
Well, I think that may be as close to the novel as I can really get. And that it was initially intended as a tribute to a friend of mine who had died a few years earlier. And then once I started visiting the place where she lived in northeast Arkansas, in the Arkansas Delta, it became more and more about a series of events that took place for which Martin Luther King's assassination was a catalyst, and her role in that, and a kind of microcosm of what went on in the small towns at that point in the civil rights movement after King's death.
You know, it also seems to be one of your most accessible poems, especially if you compare it to the earlier longer poems, One Book, One Poem. This one seems very much more accessible. The story is very clear right from the beginning. You don't so much create the town through landscape, through buildings, through trees, through things. You more through voices. You more create a peoplescape, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it just worked out that way. I never intend to be particularly opaque, but sometimes that's a byproduct of the way things get done.
Right.
But this one, I don't know, this one did seem more like a telling.
But, you know, it's really interesting in your work. I was thinking of your book, Rising, Falling, Hovering, how that narrative is diffused, as you put it. But I also noticed in that book and in other parts of your work the influence of Mexico and Latin American culture in your work. Can you talk a little bit about that influence on you as a person and as a poet?
Well, I didn't travel very much until I was in my 20s. The few trips I took out of the country prior to that were to Mexico with my family. And then in my 20s, at the end of my 20s, I went to Mexico with Forrest Gander, and we stayed a number of months. And prior to that, I'd taken a trip to the Yucatan with an old friend of mine. So Mexico is just a significant other for me. I just have always felt more comfortable in Mexico, despite what's going on there now, where I'm less at ease, though I haven't stopped going, or don't plan to stop going.
Good for you.
I've always felt more comfortable there than any other place except the Ozarks and New York City. For some reason, those three places have been the places where I felt most at home. In fact, I feel more estranged from the Ozarks than I used to.
Place to you is really important. As you said, you know, you're always influenced when you're living somewhere by the local. And when you talk about the local, is it the landscape or is it the language of the people that you're influenced by in the local?
Well, I'm very interested in people and how people talk, but I'm interested in, you know, the outside also. So I think of them pretty much as, you know, very, that they influence each other a great deal, that people really are a reflection of their landscape, of their geographical scape.
Okay, I have another quote from One with Others. I'd like to kind of get back to that because I'm trying to uncover this book. There's so much to uncover. It's so beautiful. But you have this line, I put my face to the glass. I can make out the ghost of her ironing board, bottle of bourbon on the end. I like how you use that word, the ghost of her ironing board, and because on a literal level, it describes how blurry the window is. It hasn't been cleaned in years. But on another level, the word ghost itself lingers, and it kind of evokes the presence of the dead, if you will, which seemed to linger a lot in your work. And I'm wondering, on some level, is to enter poetry, either as a poet, as a reader, to communicate with the dead, to evoke the dead?
I don't know that if I know how to communicate with the dead.
That was a leap in language there.
I don't know how to let go of, you know, my dead, of the people who have been important to me in my life who are gone. They stay with me, so I like to talk about them and bring them alive to other people who didn't get to know them.
Yeah, that actually makes sense, because I do think, and that's very Mexican, actually, right. CD. It's a very kind of Mexican concept that the dead are with you, that you celebrate them, that somehow that's why Mexico is not a death-denying culture, as opposed to, I think, this country, which has a more difficult time with having a conversation with the dead. But to shift a little bit, the conversation a little bit, I'd like to ask you what some of your literary influences were. And I'm wondering if Berryman was one of your influences.
No one's ever asked me that, but there was one book of Berryman's, the Sonnets, that I spent a lot of time with. So I guess I could say yes, just because if you read a particular book over and over and over, you know, there's some way in which you inevitably absorb it. And how it then plays itself out in your work is usually you're more or less blind to it. You know, the first poets who influenced me, and, you know, initially were people like Dylan Thomas and Yeats and Hardy. But among my contemporaries, the first poet who had a significant impact on me was Frank Stanford. And that was because he had a very rich lexicon. He had a huge body of work for somebody who was young as he was. And he was from my part of the world, so I understood that work. So that took a long time to get out from under the sort of drip line of, in a way, but I don't think I would have ever had an inkling as to what it meant to be a poet if I hadn't come in, made that contact with that work. And he also introduced me to other contemporary poets that I would have been much slower on the uptake to discover if I hadn't met him.
And how did you arrive at wanting to become a poet?
That was just a process of elimination. That's a sad story in a way.
How so?
I'd love to hear it.
You know, trying to fetch around for something that I might possibly be good at, that I had the materials for.
Were you young when you decided that you had the materials for this?
Well, I was in my mid-20s, but I had been fooling around with notebooks for forever, and I had been a voracious reader. I mean, those were words were there for me, and my family was very verbal. My father was a big reader. My brother was a pretty big reader. My mother was a court reporter. She was garrulous, and she liked crossword puzzles. Mm-hmm. And words were available for, in a small town in the Arkansas Ozarks, there weren't any other art forms. There weren't any art forms.
Well, reading is an art form because I think it's such a very imaginative conversation with a book you're reading, or with a poem you're reading, or the story you're reading. Speaking of which, CD, what are you reading these days?
Well, at the moment, I'm reading for a panel. So that means I'm reading applications. Mm. And I'm also reading this really interesting book on translation. The first time I've been totally inclined to read a book just about translation, and it's called Is That a Fish in Your Ear? Translation and the Meaning of Everything by David Bellows, who started Translation Institute at Princeton and translated Georges Perec and translated an Albanian writer through the French. So it's just a very, very readable and positive book about translation.
And you translate some, don't you, CD?
I don't translate much. I translate a tiny bit of Spanish, but I'm getting more interested. I just edited a selection of poems by a Mexican poet. I only did maybe one translation in it, but in editing that book, I got more interested in, you know, thinking I'm going to take private Spanish lessons. I'm going to get back into this, and translation does interest me.
Which poets in Spanish do you like to translate?
Well, I can't say that I do like to translate Spanish poets because I haven't done it yet. So,
oh, I thought you did that for fun.
You know, a few poems.
And did you find that process of translation that you did, did you find it frustrating or did you find it exhilarating?
I just found it interesting. And, I mean, one, it's a distraction from when you are frustrated. And, you know, it's playing around in the language and learning things and figuring out nuance and where you can move things around in order to recoup what you lost in one place. I find it very interesting. Mm. It's a task. It's an artful task.
Yeah, yes, yes. CD, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you very much, Ben. I enjoyed it.
We've been talking to CD Wright on Words on a Wire. Stay tuned for our next segment.